This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 49, recorded on October 27th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes over at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at TheAverageGuy.tv, or track me down on Twitter. Just find me at Jay Collison, although I'm considering changing that to at TheAverageGuy. I don't know why I use my name there. Nobody else does. You can find us on Facebook and now the new and improved iTunes feed that is out there. I finally got iTunes to drop the old Podomatic feed, and now the new FeedBurner feed is out there. And you can actually, if you search for The Average Guy Podcast in iTunes, you'll find our brand new feed out there. If you need to change over to that because Podomatic, we don't post Podomatic anymore, head out there. You can also grab all the links you'll ever need for the podcast to run on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, as well as Android phones or tablets. Just head over to theaverageguy.tv, look in the right-hand column, and you can grab them all right there. If you've been a listener to the show, we were just talking a few minutes off show about how many we've done here, and this is the 49th show. If you've been listening for a while and you like what we do here, I know I'd get emails from you guys that tell me how much you like listening to the podcast, but it would be really helpful if you told us on iTunes now that we have a single feed and I wiped out the other one. And so if you go back out there, let us know on iTunes. That actually boosts our ranking a little bit and allows us to be closer to the top in search. So if you got a minute, head out to iTunes, find our feed, just search for The Average Guy and give us a comment. Well, tonight it's been interesting to get the guys in. We had Mike Howard out earlier in the pre-show. He'll show up at the end of the show magically somehow in editing. As he talks about his Windows Home Server problems that he's been having and some new builds that he's been doing. But tonight with me, of course, is the always steady Eddie, Andrew Morris, Melbourne, Australia. Andrew, how are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks, Jim. Got a few stability issues with the internet connection today, but aside from that, it's a cracking day in Melbourne. We're currently sitting on about 22, 23 degrees Celsius. And
spring is on its way for you, right? I mean, you guys are in full effect.
Yep, full effect, and looking forward to a long weekend. So next Tuesday's Melbourne Cup Day, which is what the horse race they call the race that stops the nation and half the world. And Monday I'm taking off as a free annual leave day that EDS used to call the Global Diversity Day.
Nice.
So I'm being globally diverse on Monday and sleeping in.
Nice. always good to have a long weekend, and
absolutely,
yeah, it's good to get away, and you know, your winter just was not nearly long enough. I'm just gonna say, it seemed like ours drug on forever, and you were enjoying the fruits of summer, and I was looking forward to kind of grinding it into you this winter, and you never complained about it. It Melbourne must be great.
Our winter was so mild this year. The peanut gallery in the background just said it wasn't.
Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate that.
It's so cold this year. Our gas bill has gone through the roof.
Oh, so maybe it wasn't that mild, huh?
Okay, so I thought it was fairly mild.
That's awesome.
And we're coming into some nice weather. So
awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Good to have you tonight. Also filling in for Christian is the next best thing to be in there, or maybe even better than being there. It's Gary Johnson. Gary, how are you doing tonight?
Just fine, Jim.
Don't tell Christian I said that.
See, 950 plus 32. Andrew, it must be a pretty nice day there.
He was doing the Celsius to Fahrenheit calculation.
it's beautiful. It's blue sky, a little bit of loose cloud. Great day for solar production.
Well, it must be. We're in for a booger of a winter. I know it's coming. I can just feel it. We have had the best fall here in Nebraska that I think in the 20 years that I've lived here, it has been fabulous. And you know, when that happens, you are absolutely going to pay for it. And Gary, I don't know if you have any feeling for what your winter there in Buffalo is going to be like, but what's the farmer's almanac say?
I don't know, but we haven't seen the sun for about a month here, and it has rained every day for like 3 weeks and overcast. It looks at noon, it looks like 8 o'clock at night. It's been dreary. So,
well, maybe your winter will be all right. You guys get tons of snow, right?
Yeah, we get plenty. We get plenty. Comes right off Lake Erie and dumps right in at Buffalo, and we have snow shovels at the doors all winter long.
Well, and we get really, really cold Arctic blasts that come down the Rocky Mountains. And so I don't mind it that much, but I just have a feeling for whatever reason it's going to be bad this year. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming out tonight. We are still trying to track down Chris Lux. He was going to be the guest tonight. And if he comes out, we'll throw him in and get him going. I want to remind folks out on my site, I have been trying to search down a mini computer to match up with my Drobo or with a Drobo that I have from them. It's a 5-bay Drobo S that I want to load up, and then I want to put this mini computer on the top of it. If you go out to theaverageguy.tv, I think it's the very top post now. I moved that up earlier in the week. So folks could take a look at it. By the time this show is posted, it may not be the top. You can just scroll down a few. But what we're looking for, and what I've done is actually at thehomeservershow.com and from comments that folks have made on the post, trying to assemble the smallest, lightest, fastest, and that's relative. Just it has to be fast enough to run Windows Home Server 2011. Although, as you'll hear at the end of the show with Mike Howard, we had some problems with 2011. So I don't know how smart this is maybe to move that direction right now. But since I am a Windows Home Server MVP, I should be doing that. And so there's a couple options that I've been trying to track down with that. So varying form factors, I really am looking for something kind of small that I can either stick under the Drobo and use as a pedestal or set on top of the Drobo. And it just looks cool. I'm trying to kind of keep it all condensed into one place. One of the few requirements is that, well, one, it gets powerful enough to run 2011, and it's got USB 3. That is a non-negotiable. And so if you want to if you've got some time this week, head out to theaverageguy.tv, take a look at my list. You can give me some advice if you want to. You can, I've got a bunch of cases out there. I've got a bunch of boards, both AMD and Intel boards. And I did the AMD ones for Mike Howard because I know he's an AMD fanboy. Also got this bare bones unit, the Zotac bare bones, very small AMD E350 CPU, or the APU as they call it, in there. And a nice looking little 5x5x1, I forget the dimensions, 1¾ or almost 2 inches high, very, very nice small box I could just set on top of the Drobo, and that would be a really nice unit. Head out there. Guys, any advice for me on, and I'm looking for super ultra small form factor type things. Gary, have you built anything super small or seen anything out there that that might fit that bill?
I played with stuff like that and done a lot of research on it. One thing that you really, really, really want to be cognizant of is heat. You get into these small form factors, and if I was going to build something like that, I'd probably definitely go with an SSD for the OS, just to minimize the heat. I think the AMDs have been heat related issues raised with the AMD 350 ITX form factors.
Really? So, okay.
Yeah, that's just good. Be cautious good. Okay. With that. And, I've run into that mostly with guys that are using them for HTPCs. You know, like to slap them on the back of the TV with the VESA mount. So I would just be cautious with the heat dissipation and make sure that you got sufficient cooling with whatever kind of cabinet you go with.
Sure. One of the things I've been kind of leaning towards is this ICDock MB982SPR, which is basically allows you to take two laptop drives and put them together and RAID those together as one. And then it's the same size as a 3.5-inch hard drive.
Now, if you do that, go with that that Seagate XT, Momentus XT.
Drive?
Yeah, it's a hybrid. It's got 4 gigabytes of SSD as the buffer.
Okay.
And it's fast.
Okay.
It's fast.
That's 2.5. I should probably be writing this down. Hey, drop that in the show notes for me if you can find it. You have the link to that, right?
I'll link it for you. And yeah, it's got...
I'll add that to my list here.
They come in 500 gigabyte sizes.
Okay. Yeah, my plan was to go with just a 160 and RAID it, because that's the minimum size for a home server, and then put all the storage on the Drobo. And, of course, use the Drobo's RAID to kind of be the first level of protection for the data. And then I would eventually back that up to – I've got a 1 terabyte IOSafe that I would plug into there as well, and use that as the second level of backup. And so that would be fire and waterproof. It would go a lot slower because it's just USB 2, but that's okay. I only do it once a month for fire, you know, fireproof and waterproof backup. And then, of course, I'm going to use some kind of cloud service, a Voila, crash plan, something like that to back up to the cloud and make sure those files stay in sync. Andrew, any thoughts on any hardware I should add to that, you think?
I am a fan of the AMD 350 or even the 450, which is probably, from what I see, it's probably a couple of weeks away from being released into mainstream. So the 450 is, I think, a 1.8 gigahertz processor instead of 1.6. So that would probably run the run Windows Home Server 2011 just a little bit better.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
But I hadn't heard of the thermal issues. What's
the chip that I have in that? Do you remember that HP DM1Z that I bought?
That's a 350, I think. Yeah.
Is it?
So that's just had a refresh to a DM1 4000 series.
Okay.
Which has now got the 450 in it.
That fan does run a lot on that, and it puts out a little heat. Not validating what Gary just said, but it does. Yeah. It does run a little warm, so maybe that does validate Gary a little bit.
Are you running the latest BIOS on it? Because I know there's a BIOS fix for the CoolSense AMD feature.
I think I just upgraded to that through the HP support software that's on there. Actually, I found that I've just been railing on HP lately, but I'm starting to sound like Christian. I'm like, holy cow!
It from me.
I am running. I think I'll have to double check, but I think that did an automatic BIOS update for me just recently. And I should check that. It's not unbearably hot. I set it right on the desk. I don't have a cooler for it. I never pick it up and get a lot of heat out of it. I run a Core i5 on my work laptop, and that actually runs just a smidge warmer. It's anecdotal. I don't have any. I haven't gone in there and measured the CPU temperature or anything like that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, comparatively, I've got two laptops on the desk in front of me at the moment because I'm cutting over my work machine, and I've got a Centrino Core 2 Duo and a Core i5, and the heat factor between the two is phenomenal. The i5, you can hardly feel the heat in comparison to the Centrino. So I think, I think they're getting better.
They are getting a lot better. Yeah, my Core i3 is almost a refrigerator. I mean, I get zero heat off that thing.
I
was just going to say, looking for a mini ITX platform for the server, the Core i3 would be a really good candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've got a Core i3 on there on the site there that I'm looking at paired up with the Gigabyte board. Andrew?
Yeah, I was going to say, I would have thought with the AMD, a lot of them are passively cooled, so potentially, if you were to get one that's got a fan in it, you might have less issues with the thermal cooling as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I run probably 50-50 with AMD and Intel. And, the Intel costs a little more, but I think you get what you pay for. And, in fact, that's one of the things in my discussion tonight with the new bulldozers coming out. I think AMD's at kind of a critical juncture here where they've got to really demonstrate that they can elevate their game and stay competitive in the marketplace, but it's getting tougher and tougher for them. Intel's really, really dominating them in almost every category right now.
Other than 8 cores, right, for domestic platform or consumer platform?
Which one?
Didn't AMD release their 8-core a couple
weeks
ago?
Just did, yes.
Yeah, but I'm hearing rumors that the production quality on them is suspect, and they had a lot of problems getting that to market. And even Mike in the pre-show mentioned that the performance of the 8-core wasn't quite as good as the older 6-core, the Thuban 6-core. So. I haven't read all the stats and all the verdict on it. There is the 6-core, the 95-watt 6-core is one that I'm probably going to buy to upgrade my server with a 65-watt quad core in it now. But but again, like I say, if I was starting from the ground up, I'm going to probably upgrade what I have installed right now with AMD stuff. I'll add a CPU to make that box a little faster.
Yeah.
But if I was to build a box from scratch today at almost every level, I'd be going Intel.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I am a kind of a fan of this second gen i3, i5, i7 platform, and it's getting more efficient. And you just mentioned it, Andrew. They're just getting cooler. It's weird. It's each chip gets a smidge cooler as they figure out how not to burn so many cycles and make them so hot.
Yeah.
Well, Christian's running an AMD 6-core Thuban, 1055, I think. I know it was the best one that was out there when
right.
I bought it for him.
Right.
And I've been running an Intel Core i7 950 for probably 2 years now. And it kicks the daylights out of his 6-core.
Really?
Core.
All right.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
It's a much faster system, can handle a lot more load. Same
memory speed.
You know, the memory speed as far as the CPU, I'm not sure what his is. I mean, the 950 is at 3 gigahertz, I think. It's a 3
yeah.
gigahertz quad core, but that 1366 socket Core i7, man, it's a bear.
Okay.
And I think I paid like $1,200 for that box, and that was an HP box that I had a lot of trouble, you know, getting it ironed out.
Right.
It had a lot of crashes. So I bought the 920. It was a Core i7 920 when I started. HP swapped my box 4 times before I finally got one that worked right.
Right.
By then, they upgraded me to the Core i7 950. They upgraded me from a 1 terabyte drive to a 1.5 terabyte drive. And they never asked me for the keyboard or the mice back. So I got a nice collection of keyboard and mouse. I got a bigger hard drive. I got the faster CPU. And that core i7 950 CPU on Newegg still sells for like $260.
Yeah.
So I definitely got my money's worth out of the box. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And I could upgrade. I'm on a first gen Core i3. 350? No. What's the numbers on the Core i, the first generation Core i3s? It doesn't matter. First gen, and that board will support an i7, and I've thought about seeing if I can get one on a fire sale as they're clearancing those out, and I don't know. I love the Core i3. It just works for me. So, all right. Well, we've enough of those. If you want to give me some input, I'll be doing this for another week or two on the Drobo build. Great discussion around this, guys. There's a lot. I am leaning towards as well, you know, as we talk about this. There's a really nice case that I found out there, and I think maybe I just closed it. Nope, there it is. So it's an Antec ISK 300-150 mini ITX. That's one of the other requirements. I want a small board. Comes with a internal 150-watt power supply. $70 on Newegg. It's about the size that I want. It would fit nicely as a pedestal underneath the Drobo and give me the option for a drive, you know, for an optical drive as well. So that wouldn't be bad. I could pair that with, you know, with a Core i3 and have a nice little box that could even repurpose to a HTPC down the road if I wanted to. So some good stuff out there. If you've got some suggestions for me, let it fly. Either leave a comment on theaverageguy.tv or go over to Facebook and drop it there, or homeservershow.com in the forums. There's a post for it. All right. We talked a little bit earlier about recycle programs. Gary and I were talking, and I just wanted to let folks know that if you've got a bunch of PCs laying around, and who doesn't have a bunch of crappy PCs that they can't get rid of, don't throw them in the landfill. That's the wrong thing to do. If you're here in the United States, there's places like Best Buy, and I even think there's some trade-in programs around. Maybe if you check with your local Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, any of those kind of big box stores, sometimes they're getting more responsible about taking them on recycle. You might want to check with your city trash collection. That's not really what they call it anymore, is it? What do they call themselves? But whoever hauls your trash away, you might have a day when they pick those things up. Sometimes they charge you, sometimes they don't. Check around. I know Gazelle now is partnering with Newegg, and sometimes you can sell it back to them even if they don't take it for money. They'll send you a box and they'll recycle it. Guys, any other, Andrew, any special recycling things in there in Australia?
Yeah, there used to be in Victoria where we are a program called PCs for Kids. So what used to happen there is you'd take all your old crappy machines to them, and if they could, you know, bring various components, be it memory, disk, you know, video cards, whatever, together to build machines for kids who folks necessarily can't afford them.
Oh, that's a nice way to do it.
Yeah.
Then they fix them and add components to them and and that stuff and get them.
Yeah,
out.
That sort of make the best of a bad lot.
I was doing that for a while, just, you know, I'd collect parts and then somebody'd say, oh, I need a PC for something. So, well, let me just, you know, I'll put a bunch of junk together and give it to you. And that worked for some college students, some things. It's hard to do that now because they put so many requirements on these college kids.
Well, and what I've found is a lot of people, you say, well, you know, I'll give you a Pentium 3 800 megahertz processor or something similar like that. And they just go, why?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Hey, you know, what's wrong with free, you know?
Right, right. Other Jim out in chat says FreeCycle. That's at free, FreeCycle.org. It looks like an organization that will take it. Gary, do you have any, you got any recycling tips?
Find unsuspecting relatives. yeah, sure.
Hey,
this is
you
great
want
stuff.
This? I know Best Buy charges $10 for monitors, old CRT monitors, but they give it back to you in a $10 gift card. So it's kind of nice. It's I've had some monster CRTs that I recently gotten rid of. Gary, looks like you got a CRT right behind you there.
I still got my old Hitachi, what are they, 903 20-inch? Yeah, Hitachi SuperScan 813s. That was a $2,000 monitor back in the day.
Yeah, which isn't that crazy?
I picked up from a wholesaler out in San Diego who reprocessed stuff for $200 a piece. And yeah. And they still run. They still have a beautiful, gorgeous. I use them for troubleshooting and debugging.
Right. I got one out in the garage. It's a good. I got a big 21-inch monitor out in the garage that I've had for 10 or 11 years, and those things were expensive. Most of them I bought from work as they were getting rid of them, and they'd sell them for $50, you know, it was just maybe 3 years ago that I actually got my first flat screen. So we've quickly moved.
And it's handy because, you know, like people will bring in old stuff that they need me to take a look at and try and fix. So
right.
Having something like that, that takes that old VGA plug and,
right. Yeah, keeps the spare parts. I was talking to a guy this week who said his computer was having trouble. And I said, well, hey, and he goes, it's really old. And I said, well, I still have a parallel USB external, you know, drive enclosure that you would put together. And I've held on to it just for that purpose because I know I'm going to have a friend that their old PC is going to take a crap and they're going to have those pictures on it that they want back. And I can get them back, I think, if the drive hasn't failed. I can get it back for them using that equipment. So you want to keep some of that stuff around. You know, the Pentium 2 processors, there's probably no need to. I stripped a bunch of those out about 6 or 7 years ago from some PCs and stacked them up in a closet out in the garage. Probably no need to keep that kind of stuff around anymore.
Don't think so.
Some old sound cards and such that what I actually do is I pull the hard drive out of the PC and then I jam as much of this crap in it as I can, and then I take it to Best Buy and just turn it in. So it's kind of like Gazelle, except Best Buy's taking it. And they do no questions asked. I mean, it's just take it to the store. They say, did you take the hard drive out? Because they don't want the hard drive. Just take the hard drive out. You say yes. They slap a recycle sticker on it and say thank you. And that's it. No questions asked. So
what do they do with it?
I think they send it to – they got a third party that they try and salvage as much as they can and resell that stuff on eBay or whatever.
I would imagine nowadays most of it's just crushed, smelted, and broken down back into
you would hope
basic
so.
Elements. I mean, you know, you got silver and gold in there and copper and
mercury.
You melt it all down, separate it out. You probably get a decent buck for it. So they don't take hard drives anymore.
Well,
that's a shame.
As Gary is stacking, I got a stack just like that, Gary. I'll be honest with you. That's
just the one on my desk.
My kids like to take them apart and pull the magnets out of them.
Ah, cool.
And then it's just they leave me with a heap. That pretty much guarantees the data's gone, you know, once they do that, right? And then so I got a heap of metal, and I just take those to the I just take that to the trash, and they recycle the metal or whatever. So we actually have a service at work that that takes those hard drives and sends them through shredders. And it just it shreds the hard drive. Can you imagine the grinder?
Pretty
that
stout
is
shredder.
Just drop that in, it's gone.
Just and they're awesome to watch.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, they chip, they chip a hard drive into. Yeah, they chip a hard drive into like 5 millimeter pieces.
Yeah, yeah. What did you say, Gary?
Yeah, I say, and then they probably take the shards and meld them all down, and.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, that's we got to get better about that as a planet. So it's some of the stuff we cannot. I was at the Kansas City Art Institute a couple weekends ago visiting my son who's in college down there. And he, so we're, one of his professors, it was Parents' Day. And so this professor, one of the professors was given a class, you know, kind of a summary class. And one of the projects they have to do is they have to go out and find a bunch of junk and bring it in. And then they stack it all up and they use that as the subject, right, for their art, which is really cool. So you got different angles, different textures, different quality kind of stuff. You know, it's just a really great exercise.
I think the last episode of CSI was about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was junk art.
Yeah. Yeah. So he said this statement, and it just kind of struck me. He goes, you know, if there's one thing we do well as Americans, that is we make junk.
Tons of it.
Just an enormous. And you can see, Gary, from the back of your camera and the back of mine, which I got this PC up, it's just a piece of junk, but we are good at collecting junk. So other Jim also posted in chat dban.org for deleting the data off your hard drives before you send them in. I think we talked about that on one of these shows one time of how to, this would have been early, Andrew, back in the early days of the podcast, how to delete data, basically any kind of data off your hard drive and make sure all of it is gone. That's at dban.org. We'll drop that in the show notes for you.
It's quite a while ago we talked about that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you can
I've used it.
Have you?
Yeah.
I guess I'm just not paranoid enough. And I don't know. I got a stack of hard drives too. And I guess from time to time I've cleared them. But I don't know. I guess I don't have anything worth getting in anybody else's hands. So since I've moved my finances to the cloud and I use mint.com.
Oh, you are a trusting soul.
I just don't. It's not local anymore.
Ain't nobody getting my numbers.
Yeah, well, it's horribly convenient and it works really well. So it's a nice service. Also in pre-show, or Andrew, right before we came on, you were talking about changing your internet service provider over. Actually, your throughput tonight has been dynamite. I mean, your audio has been good and video has been great. That's not typical. I just
unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of unusual. Usually we struggle with you a little bit. You were talking about maybe upgrading to cable, and so that would change. What do you currently have now, and what would that change it to?
We currently got an 8 megabit download, and I think it's 768 kilobit upload on ADSL. So that would probably bring us up to, I think, about 30 meg down and 5 meg up.
Yeah, you'd really join us in the realm of speed. Yeah.
The only reluctance I have, of course, is I don't know how subscribed our street is and our node on the cable node at the moment. So, you know, if everyone's downloading something at the same time or streaming video or something like that, you know, you get the slice of the pie.
Yeah. And, you know, we have that too. I'm on a cable modem. And Gary, you're on a cable modem, right, at this point?
Nope.
No? Oh, that's right. You're Fios.
I'm on fiber optic.
You're Fios.
And it's the next step above cable. It's fabulous. I run the speed test from Speakeasy and speedtest.net, and like clockwork, every time I test it, I get 43 megabits per second down and I get 30 megabits per second up, and that's under, that doesn't matter what the weather is, how many people are surfing or what, it's 43 down and 30 up.
That's awesome.
Day in, day out.
That's awesome. That's got to be my next purchase. That's not an option for us here in the Omaha market. So,
neither for us.
Be glad. Well, Andrew, a big step for you would be cable, And yep. So if we're starting the Andrew Morris Cable Scholarship Fund, send donations directly to theaverageguy.tv. We do have a donation link, so if you want to make donations to Andrew's changeover to cable, that would be great.
Go click the Newegg link and buy something for us.
There you go. Or just the Google ads gets us a few dollars. So one of the things I did this week is I just canceled my voiceover IP. Gary, you'd said you'd had voiceover IP for about 10 years. I was surprised to find out it was 8 for me. I had no idea I had been on voiceover IP that long. We had gone with a company called Packet 8 or 8x8. And
you know,
go ahead.
I gotta think it's even longer than that, Jim. I've had it almost ever since I've lived here, and that was we've been here over 20 years. So yeah, it's probably more like 15 years or better.
Yeah.
And I started. It's funny because I started with Ooma, and that lowered my phone bill.
Right.
You know, from like $60-$65 a month down to it was I got the $15 a month package, but with the fees it came to about $20 a month.
Right.
And that was unlimited long or that was 500 minutes a month, which we never went over.
Right.
And then you know, just about the time they came out with the commercials, hey, I got the Vonage, this is my last
right.
phone bill, and they toss it on the pile, I'm sitting there laughing because like 3 months before, like I switched to Ooma and there's my Vonage bill.
Yeah,
because
right.
instead of $15 a month plus the fees and spending $20-$25 a month on Vonage, I'm spending $3.47 a month for phone.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I used to in the early days, God, the phone bill used to just drive me nuts. And it was so expensive. You know, I think back 20 years ago, 20 years ago, phone was expensive.
Oh, if you had my wife, all her family live in the Baltimore area. So.
Right.
I'd get the phone bill and I'd look at the long distance bill and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm over $100 a month for a phone bill.
And Gary, that used to, so there's a little bit of a paradox here because that used to drive me nuts, right? And now I'm willing to shell out. Now we got 5 phones, but we're all our cell phones put together. $25 a month.
Yeah.
Is what
and you don't even think, hey,
I don't even bat an eye at it. Right?
No, that's
and,
clear. I got a good deal on my cell phone.
They have just suckered me into that thing. Now, we can't. I mean, our cell phones give our kids incredible freedom and the ability for us to track them down anywhere. So we're not moving away from that at all. But it is, you know, we went completely cell phone this week and I called Packet 8 and they said, you know, is there a problem with the price? I said, no, we just don't want to mess with the landline. No one was checking the messages anymore. My credit card expired and it's for 2 months. I think they shut me off a month ago and I don't think anybody noticed. Right. So, you know, it's just one of those things where the landline is gone. We don't even think that way anymore. And everyone's so attached to their cell phone. My daughter who had a cell phone for 3 days, it's like she's had it for a year. I mean, she is so good on that thing now. And I bet she had 30 texts sent out in the first hour.
You ever watch these kids text? Oh my God, they can text faster than I can talk.
Yeah, we got her a slide out keyboard on her phone. That's what she wanted, and it is like she was made for that phone. At first day, just typing away, closing. I mean, it was just crazy. So. Voice over IP, which I thought I was so revolutionary, and maybe I was 8 or so years ago moving to that, is now dead to me, so to speak, and have made the transition onto cell phone only. I had to boot a kid off. That was the only bad thing is my second oldest. We booted my oldest off back in the spring, and then I had to boot number 2 off and give them their own lines. And then, you know what? They're working. They need to cover that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, right? You know, grow up.
Yeah, get out. Did I say that out loud? So we booted him off, and Sprint, you know, we transferred the liability over to that, and he picked up a new phone in the process and got that taken care of. But just the price thing, right? I mean, God, it used to kill me when I get a $200, and I didn't get a $200 bill every month. And now I pay $225, just no problem. Just comes right out of the account. Now it kills me.
Oh yeah.
It's we've just traded one thing.
Well,
for the other.
I laugh too because, I drive a 2010 Honda Accord, beautiful car, $30,000 car, cell phone and my Verizon Fios subscription, combine those two, which is basically my communications bill.
Yeah.
Is more than my car payment.
Than your car payment.
Yep.
That's painful.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, and we don't bat an eye at it. I mean, it's.
But again, I use the cell phones and I use the internet all day long, and so does my family. And you know, it's a must-have for us.
No, right on. I can't, and I'm so tied to it with work and such. You have to do it. So, interesting. One little last tidbit of information this week: Vint Cerf. If you don't know who Vint Cerf is, VintCerf. He's actually the father of the internet, believe it or not. He helped create it, not Al Gore. Mm-hmm. And he was in town, and he's a friend of Gallup and a senior scientist for Gallup and working with the local university, which we are as well, UNO, University of Nebraska at Omaha. Got to hear him speak a couple times, just fascinating guy. And he is still moving and thinking and creating, and maybe the smartest guy I've ever met. He is just crazy smart, talking about IPv6 coming out. You know, we're out of internet. If you didn't know, we are out of internet addresses. They are gone. IPv4 have all been taken up and been reserved. There are pockets of them that have been reserved by companies and such that you can still get those. Of course, the prices are getting a little higher on those because the demand is high and the supply is low. Next April is they did IPv6 day this year. And I forget what day that was on. Next year, they're going to do IPv6 week and try and get everybody to switch over to version 6 and just see what kind of problems they have. We are eventually going to have to move over to a different addressing system for the internet. I mean, it's inevitable. We don't have enough addresses. We continue to put devices that need IP addresses on the internet at an alarming, and that's probably not, it's the wrong word to use, but at an amazing rate. And so get ready. I mean, this isn't something we're talking a lot about, but it's going to be a reality for most of us as we switch our systems over from, you know, IPv4 to IPv6. It is coming. And I know Windows is thinking about it, and there's some embedded IPv6 functionality inside it already. I know the cable providers or the internet providers are doing nothing, it seems, at this point to get ready for it.
Yeah, I know our internet provider that we use, they're just going to use network address translation on IPv4.
Yeah.
I reckon that's going to cause its own issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think it's going to take us, it'll probably take us a solid decade. I bet we won't be switched over until the end of the decade. He's hoping a lot sooner. For that. But interestingly enough, they're building, I don't know if you guys knew this, but they're building an interplanetary internet that will go.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, between the Earth, the Moon, and Mars. So as we start, and we don't have anything orbiting the Moon at this point, but as they have missions starting in 2015, and for any orbiter that goes up or any satellite goes up, it's going to go up with equipment that can create this, what do you call it in space? Is it terrestrial? No. Is that what it's called? Up there in space? Anyways, it'll create this network of basically routers that spacecraft can use to access the internet in space and move. They're already thinking about how they're going to move data packets from Earth to Mars. And kind of cool. Some kind of cool stuff. And not like space. You know, this is like going to be hundreds of years from now or 50 years from now. I mean, this is stuff that they're already thinking about, and it's going into current NASA missions as we send stuff into space. So they're thinking about how are we going to get connectivity, IP connectivity, and it's not really what it's called, but how are we going to get connectivity in space? Isn't that crazy? So
that's kind of sad.
Well,
here's my first tweet from the moon. Got here. Lol.
Yeah.
Ash moon tweet.
Yeah.
Time's up. Got to go back.
That's right. Your battery's dead. Well,
roaming cost would be a bitch, wouldn't it?
Think about the rovers that they've sent out there. And as we continue to send more equipment and type things, they would all use then, instead of having to build high power transmitters into those, of course, they could use lower power transmitters to go up to the satellites. And then, because sometimes you can't communicate; those things can't communicate when they're on the other side, right? Because they lose communication when the planet when Mars rotates around is not facing Earth.
Well, that's basically what they did with the Mars rovers.
Right, right.
Spirit and Opportunity. Yep. Those were remarkable missions. In fact, I think Opportunity is still functional. I think Spirit died and can't get restarted, but I think the other one is still actually moving around the planet. And what they do is they relay up to the orbiting craft, and then that gets relayed back to NASA.
Yeah. And so there's a little bit of that in it now. I mean, they're talking about a full-fledged internet, interplanetary internet, where those packets get stored and then forwarded when a connection becomes available. So some pretty cool stuff. I think it's coming out here pretty quick, and just an interesting day with Vint Cerf. And Rennie says, one small tweet for man. That is good. Gary, you couple
be the name of the show.
That's right. If we name the show that way. Gary, you guys purchased a Silicon Dust HD Home Run Prime, and that's been in the house now for a while. How's that experiment going for you guys?
It's actually got its ups and downs. Basically, it works well when it works.
And tell me, before you start, just give us a quick breakdown on the Prime and what that is.
It is a wonderful concept. And what it is that there's a small box, I guess about the size of a typical modem. And you purchase an M card, cable card from your provider, the same that you would put in a TiVo or any other type of tuning device. And you put that in a slot in the Prime. And then inside the Prime are three tuners. So in theory, this device should be able to tune in to three separate digital cable channels with the decryption provided by the M card that you get from your cable company. Typical rental fee for the M card is like $4 a month. The unique part about it is that you don't plug this into your computer. You plug this device into your router or switch. Now, when you do that, these three tuners are available to any computers on your network on a first-come, first-served basis. So,
yeah, through like Windows Media Center.
Right.
Right.
So basically, it works as advertised beautifully on any of my wired computers.
Okay, hardwired.
Anything that's hardwired to gigabit LAN is working fine. Where I'm having trouble is with my wired systems. I've got a small laptop, my little Asus tablet, Atom dual core Atom powered thing. If it's the only device that's watching television, it'll run for hours with no problem. The minute I start getting other tuners activated, then the tablet starts throwing errors. Weak signal, viewer listening conflict, no tuner available, that sort of thing. So I've got the engineers at Silicon Dust promising me that they're going to look at my logs that I've sent them and try and do some diagnostics. But like I say, for the most part, for what I do, it already works and does what I want it to do. But it still isn't quite functioning as advertised, which would be all three tuners engaged at the same time, giving adequate service to all the devices that should be able to access it.
Okay.
And primarily the only difficulty is with my wired or my wireless devices. And I've tested my LAN speed on the tablet on the wireless. I'm getting a minimum of 35 megabits per second up and down. So, and each channel takes about 10 megabits per second. So it really shouldn't be a problem.
You don't think, the wireless connections sometimes use some burst technology, and I'm not getting that right, but they can speed up and slow down that connection kind of based on, you don't think that's having any kind of effect on it as the router's trying to, you're pushing a lot of bandwidth through there.
It might. And the thing I'm, but the fact that when the wireless device is the only one that's being employed, there's no problem. I can't see this as being a problem with the wireless router. I'm more thinking that when you get all three tuners involved and they're all trying to pipe that data out the same network connection, that somehow maybe the internal processing in the HD home run isn't able to get all the packets out the pipe at the same time.
Sure.
So again, yeah, it's hard to pinpoint.
And they're working with you on that, Silicon Dusters?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. No, they've been very, very, you know, communicative.
So is wired, if all three are wired, it works great at this point for you as advertised. Do you have three different, so on your network, do you have multiple PCs recording multiple programs based on who's using those PCs then?
Well, we can. I mean, you know, we can go to any computer in the house and fire up Windows Media Center and pull up a tuner and either watch or record. So, yeah, when I'm testing, I run up to Christian's room, I get his going, I come back down, I get mine going, and I go get my tablet and get that going. But, yeah, there's plenty of, we've got plenty of desktops that can pull on it to test it. So,
yeah, that's cool. I use their older version, a dual tuner, for that. And we actually have a HT PC out in the living room that the wife uses to record her shows. And then I do the same thing and have a whole set of different recorded. And I don't watch what she watches. I try not to anyways. And Andrew's smiling and, he knows the deal. And then I record my shows, which are the nerdy, you know, Nova and some of those PBS stuff and This Old House and some of that stuff. And then I can watch it here or she can watch it there, and it works real great for that. So that's a good little system to come up with.
No, it's good technology. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Now mine will pull down over the air. So I don't purchase cable. I get the basic cable. I shouldn't say I don't purchase it. I do. I get the basic cable. It's $20 here.
Right.
And that's just 29 channels or 28, whatever that is.
And then it's not encrypted, right?
It is not encrypted. And I pull over the air as well. And so we get our HD channels through over the air, which works great. I need to get a little bit better of an antenna. I'll just be honest. This winter, I'm going to probably hook something up and get, I just have a little flat RCA. It's 12 by 12 or so, 12 inches by 12 inches. And, it works okay. I could do better. I need to get something hooked up on it, but that's a good way to do that. Andrew, you just put a link in Skype chat, and this is alarming and disturbing to me, but are you saying that HP is going to keep the PC unit now? Is that what ZDNet is? Not that I want to get Gary all riled up on HP again.
No, it's okay. That way I got somebody to pick on. Hey, maybe Meg Whitman will straighten it out, you know?
So what's that article saying?
Well, basically they're saying that Meg Whitman promised she'd make a quick decision, and she has.
Wow.
Well,
so
I
think it's a good move, actually.
I think it's a plus for the consumer because I think HP keeps prices down. I really do. Sometimes at the expense of quality, but at least it creates competition.
So does that mean the touchpad may have a life?
Well, I don't know if you saw across the blogosphere over the last few days. I was reading somewhere the other day that they're testing Windows 8 embedded on the touchpad.
Yeah, I saw that too. In fact, there's a link or there's a thread in the Home Server Show forums, and we've been talking about that. I was under the impression, or I believe that HP hardware was not as good as it could have been for that OS. Now, there's some other folks who feel like the OS is not ready for prime time, and that was really good hardware. So if it was really good hardware, go ahead, Gary.
You don't think there, with Meg Whitman at the helm, there might not be some synergy with a tablet for eBay?
Oh, never thought of that. Boy.
I'm just saying, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I mean, they're hitching the tablet to a specific company and function.
Market.
And,
No, that's not a bad thought.
You know, what's wrong with an eBay tablet?
Andrew, what's your opinion of the hardware, though?
Look, having used it for about a month now, I think the biggest thing I don't like about the hardware is I always feel like I'm going to drop it. I don't know if that's because of the way I hold it, or if it's just me being nervous about dropping something that should have been worth the $700 that I got for $150.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't feel as bad if you dropped it it, paying 150 as you would if you'd have paid 700.
Yeah, true.
That's one consolation.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it were an iPad, you know, if I'd gone out and dropped $900 on an iPad and you drop that, you'd be gutted.
Just on a side note, Christian came home from school today and announced that the school he attends will be requiring all students in his high school next year to have an iPad 2, they will not be purchasing textbooks next year. Yeah. All textbooks will be on the iPad.
He mentioned that, I think, just last week, too. So he was a little late, maybe a little late in telling you, Gary. But
doubt.
I think, you know, welcome to life, Dad, right?
Yeah.
I get that all the time from my kids, too. Oh, Dad, I didn't tell you? No, you didn't tell me.
No, he's been talking about it, but apparently it's been made official.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe he had said they were considering it.
Yes.
In there. But, I can, you know, I can attest. So, Andrew, you don't think – sorry to keep coming back to that, but I have a special interest in this hardware or hardware software. I mean, is that tablet good enough to put Windows 8 on, do you think?
Yeah, I think from what I'm reading, the ARM processor will probably let it down, although Windows Embedded, I think, will run on ARM. So I think the hardware's good enough. I mean, a lot of the guys at work around me are running Android 2.3.7 on it, and it runs brilliantly.
Okay.
As an Android.
So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the hardware is up to snuff, and the OS isn't as ready for prime time. Although you said they just released a patch a couple weeks ago, right? That kind of upgraded that.
Yeah, they went to 3.0.4, and the performance has improved out of sight.
Okay. Very cool. Well, if anybody wants to give me their HP touchpad, I'm still taking them, by the way. just saying. it'll be interesting to see what goes on at HP, Gary. I agree with you. I think that competition is good for the market. So them leaving the PC market was a bad deal. Let's hope Meg can turn things around from a directional decision before Oracle buys HP. And let's just hope. Because reduced competition is not good.
I agree. It just, like I say, it just, they're a low cost provider. When you look at what they provide, and basically I learned through experience that when you buy an HP box, a system, it's got the minimum of everything to just make it do what it got. So you know that power supply has just enough, you know. Yeah. So, but again, by putting a product out at that price point, it keeps the Dells and everybody else honest.
Sure. Yeah. They can't. Hey, Gary, let's be clear about something real quick. I'm seeing some notes in chat that people may have misinterpreted what you said about the iPad being required. Christian goes to a private school.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Not a public school.
Yep.
So
it's a Catholic school, and I'm not sure, but I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Catholic University is being sued by Muslims as being too Catholic and not providing prayer space for the Muslim students.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe Christian's in for that next year as well.
it's America is a great place to live.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. At least you haven't had the situation where there's that same denominational factor have tried to change the words to your national anthem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
we've got a congressman who's suing the voters for the election he lost.
Wouldn't that be great?
Only in America.
Yeah, still the greatest country in the world besides Australia, of course. Right.
True.
Speaking of great countries, over the last year, of course, we've had some natural disasters all over the world, and many of them focused in places that make the devices that we really like, right? So the tsunami in Japan recently, there's been a whole rash of floods that really have not made the news that much in Thailand, right, that have wiped out some hard drive factories or at least slowed that down. Gary, you're seeing that, and I haven't been following this. I've not been buying hard drives. I've got a bunch of them that I'm kind of stocked up on, so I haven't. I kind of did the full fauché on that one and loaded up on hard drives. But
I wish I had.
Yeah. So what are you seeing out there?
Well, I can say I think I mentioned the last time I was on when I highlighted my deal of the day that the 3 terabyte 7200 RPM Seagate drive was on sale at Newegg for $149, which was the lowest I'd ever seen it, which was a steal.
Right.
You can't find one of those drives now for less than $250. And at Newegg, they show it at $179. But then when you click to put it in your basket, that tells you that it must be purchased with other hardware. And the cheapest option is like $400 for whatever they bundle with it, some memory chips or whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah, I've done some reading. The plants that produce a lot of the components and assemble hard drives are underwater in Thailand, and production is virtually come to a standstill. So we're going to see a shortage of hard drives for a few months to come here, and as a result, the prices are going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
In fact, I looked up when we were talking earlier about that 2.5-inch hybrid Momentus drive.
Mm-hmm.
I think I paid like $79 for mine when I bought it. It's on Newegg now for $149.
All right, so double the price.
Yep.
Yeah. Now we have to remember we were worried about memory prices when the tsunami hit Japan, and yep. those have just hit the bottom right yep. now, right? And so maybe these will be short term. You think at three to six months, maybe?
It's possible. The only difference between that is when you look at a hard drive compared to a memory chip, you got a lot of moving parts in a hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, you got servos, motors, arms, armatures, magnets, platters, coatings, et cetera, et cetera.
True.
Whereas in a memory chip, you basically are on one production line.
They just stamp those out.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. Yep. Well, anyway, so maybe not a great time to buy hard drives. Hopefully you full foshade it and stocked up when they were cheap. I love that term. That is just the best. Mm-hmm. We credit Rich O'Neill for the origination of the word. Gary, you know what we're talking about when we say the full foshade?
Not really. I figured it was an inside thing.
Among the podcasts. So Mike Fauché over at BYOB, the Build Your Own Box on the Home Server Show Network. He is a guy that will buy. When he's testing something, he doesn't just buy one of anything. He buys three or four at a time, right? So when he was testing microphones, he bought three different kinds of microphones all at the same time, not one at a time to test them. He bought them all at once. And then I'll talk to him and I'll say, so what do you think of your mic? And he's like, well, I like this and I like that and I like this, but I got this other one. And he just reaches over and pulls it in to the discussion. And he's talking about, he still got it. It's I didn't like this. It's just sitting over here. And then he'll say, but I tried this one, and he'll grab another one and pull it over. The guy's just got tons of equipment. So
kind of like me with headphones.
If you go to the Urban Dictionary and type in and look for the full fauché, F-O-S-H-A-Y with a dash, F-O-S-H-A-Y. Rich got that submitted and approved out at the Urban Dictionary. And it's anytime you do something all the way with extreme quality, right? If you buy
full out.
Yeah, full out. So if you're going to buy one hard drive, you buy three.
Or balls to the wall.
That's it. The whole and
of
it
course,
can't.
Do you understand the derivation of balls to the wall?
Yep.
You know it, Andrew?
Yeah. We use it down here as well.
Yeah, but do you understand its origin?
Yeah.
No, I don't, Gary. Is it clean enough for this show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
At the turn of the century, most electricity was produced by steam generators. Okay, and coal-fired plants, they'd boil it, would use coal to fire up a boiler. The boiler would generate steam. The steam would run a generator. Well, generators, you want to run at a constant speed, so they had to have a method of governing the speed of the generator. So the mechanism is you have a governor, which is a shaft that spins on the vertical axis, and at the top are two big levers. And at the end of each lever, there's a huge ball. And the faster that generator spins, the higher those balls rise due to centrifugal force. And when they get to the top, they close, they limit the steam valve coming in so that the generator can't go any faster. So when the generator comes to full speed, it's balls to the walls.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very nice. I did not know that. Very good.
You can thank Jay Leno for that explanation. he collects antique steam generators.
Really? Yeah. Among other things.
Yep.
Andrew just threw the Urban Dictionary link. Make sure that makes it in the show notes as well, Andrew.
Yeah.
In there for the full fauché. So very cool. Anyways, Mike has been a good sport about that as we have brought. It's our goal to get that into the tech vernacular anytime you're doing something all the way. You say, yeah, I did the full fauché. So very good. All right.
Yes, I brought it up.
Okay, let's do one more. We've been on a while. This time has flown by, and we're going to go a little late here. But the Asus Transformer 2, and you're now calling that the pad phone?
Well, they've been dropping little hints. There's been some video clips put out into the wild. The first one is the successor to the Asus Transformer, which should be out before the end of the year. It's the Transformer 2. It will be it's going to be a quad-core CPU and the latest NVIDIA graphics technology. So it's supposed to be quite a step up. And there's also a rumbling of a pad phone, which is going to be a tablet. And on the back, there's a little compartment you pop open where you can plug in a cell phone. I'm not sure what cell phone, what it's going to be required, but the cell phone will be the processing power for the tablet. Like we've discussed over the last
couple
year?
Podcasts. Yeah. Yeah. We've had you on. Yeah. Since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about that being the direction that the industry will probably consolidate towards as processing power gets more powerful in smaller spaces. More than likely, you'll have a phone that you drop into your tablet. You drop in. The Atrix has already got the laptop configuration in place.
And connectivity.
And maybe you'll sit down at your desktop and just put it into your keyboard and same thing, you know. Your 24-inch monitor and your keyboard are there and all the processing's being done by a phone that you just plug into your keyboard. Take it with you. Take your tablet. Plug it into your tablet, etc. So that seems to be like it's on the horizon and that technology is moving rapidly.
Yeah, we're just going to see more of that kind of stuff come out, right? I would think. Yeah, tethering. I mean, that kind of takes tethering to a new level.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially as the new phones get more and more powerful.
Yeah, and I think the days of the classic voice cell phone, they're going to go by the wayside just like the landline. You know, it's a technology whose time has passed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, data is being transmitted. Gigabytes of data are being transmitted by this handheld device. You might as well carry the voice traffic over the same data stream rather than splitting voice, data, video, you know, just put it all on the same package. And here's the one device. Here's your package that you need to pay for on a monthly basis.
Yep.
And it all does it all.
Do you hear that, Sprint? They don't do that. You can't.
I think it's what it's moving towards.
Yeah,
right?
No, I agree with you.
As the infrastructure, the limiting factor, I think, right now, besides the device technology, which seems to be moving at a good clip, is getting the bandwidth infrastructure in the wireless carriers built out to where it can handle the load.
Yeah, right on. And that the wireless carriers have already recouped their investment in the voice lines. So,
How many times over?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think we're moving that direction as well. Hey, one more thing. I saw this in the notes, Gary. 18 terabyte hard drives made possible using ordinary table salt?
Well, it's just a scientist has recently figured out how to increase the density of the platter by adding sodium chloride to the mix that puts the platters together. So they're talking about 18 terabyte hard drives. I put a link there in the show notes.
Yeah.
Cool. The electron microscopy shows like going down from 20 nanometers per bit location to 15 nanometers, which takes 3 terabytes up to 18. So, and TDK has some HAMR head technology, which is supposed to do some bringing out, they're talking about 6 terabytes in the near future and 18 terabytes on the horizon.
So yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah, and a very good news that they're thinking about that, because we seem to be, you know, right now, three terabytes seems to be a pretty reasonable limit for the most part. I know there's some 4 coming, yeah.
There's 4s out there in the externals, just like they were when the first 3s came out. So
it's
coming.
Yeah, it's on its way. All right, guys, I've got some audio at the front of the show as we were waiting for Andrew to show. Andrew, anything else you want to add this evening? We'll get ready to wrap this up. We got a monster. I've got an hour and 45 minutes of show to produce here at the end. Anything else?
No. Just hope everyone in Australia has a long weekend, and if they're going to bet on the cup, back a winner.
Now, what is this cup? What is this?
Okay, so the Melbourne Cup is probably one of the oldest standing horse races in Australia. So.
Okay. So it's like the Kentucky Derby. It's like our Kentucky Derby. Okay, very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that's that has lost a little bit of luster here in the United States. That used to be a pretty big deal, and I don't know if it gets that much traffic anymore but it's big, still a pretty big deal there. Lots of folks show up.
Yeah, look, my current client is one of the leading industry leaders for gambling and wagering in Australia. So for them, it's a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably their biggest punting day in the year.
Okay. Very cool. Well, thanks for Andrew. Thanks for taking a second and join us on your Friday lunchtime to be a part of the show. And
all good.
Thanks for coming.
Love being on board.
Yeah, no, it's always good to have you. Hey, with the holiday show notes still going to work for you this weekend? We get the show out there. Okay. Very cool. And Gary, thanks for you're always a great replacement for Christian. We do miss him, but you do a great job of filling in. Thanks for being on the show tonight.
Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. I'll remind folks as well, I'm going to have some content on the end of this. So you're going to hear music in a few seconds here. And stay through the music. And then Mike Howard joined us before the show, and we're going to play that after the show for you and talk a little bit about his Windows Home Server issues that he's having. If you don't know what a Windows Home Server is, just Google that. You should by now. Most of your listeners came over from there. If you don't, Google that in and get familiar with it. Some good discussion about the latest version that he's struggling with a little bit, as well as some build. He's got some new parts for a build, and then we kind of brought that in on the beginning of the show. So sorry to mix that up for you, but that's the way we will do it. I'll let you know, we also have a new iTunes feed. So if you head out to iTunes and just search for the Average Guy Podcast, you'll find us, and you can subscribe to both the financial tech, the fitness tech, although I haven't done a fitness tech in a while, and home tech out there. We have a new financial tech. If you're listening to that, it's Andrew and I have been on a little hiatus for about 5 weeks. Andrew Hunt over at Gallup Federal Credit Union will join me tomorrow. We'll actually record one in the studio and then have that produced over the weekend, probably come out sometime after this podcast has. Pop over and give that a listen. Surprisingly, we had the last version of that 9. We recorded that 5 weeks ago. Okay, so it's been out a while.
Give me a call, Jim, for the financial tech. Oh. I just got finished reading All the Devils Are Here, and I've been studying the mortgage crash for like 3 years now.
Okay.
I know where all the bodies are buried.
Maybe Gary
wants
to do
it. So much fun, Gary.
Maybe you and me will have to do a special edition of that. When I do it in studio, it's really hard to add the Skype in.
The New York wealth extraction machine.
Yeah, we'll have to. Maybe we'll have to do a special edition, you and me, and we'll grind that out of you. So you can find us also on Facebook to search for the Average Guy Podcast. Of course, if you go out to theaverageguy.tv, we have all the links necessary to automatically download this podcast. And if you got a few minutes, head out to iTunes and leave a comment on the show. That helps us out a little bit, moves things up, and maybe get some new viewers and some new listeners. That's always good for the podcast. This will wrap it up for the Home Tech Podcast, and we'll be back here next Thursday. It's not Thanksgiving yet, right? No. We'll be back here next Thursday. I keep thinking Thanksgiving's just like a week away. The time has been going so fast. Next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern, with all the guys back, and hopefully we'll get Chris Lux. Maybe we'll reschedule him for another time. Chris, sorry we missed you here on the Home Tech Podcast. Good night. We'll be right back. on version 2, Gary?
Of?
Windows Home Server?
I'm on both.
You're on both.
Yeah, I got the old version 1 running. We got lucky. I'm sure Christian talked about it a while back where we unbricked our old 485. And let me just accept my error.
Have you tried to restore from version 2 yet?
Yeah, first excuse the look. I didn't plan on coming on.
No, you're good, man.
You look marvelous. I mean, look at me. I'm in my best t-shirt.
I've been working out in the yard all day. Oh. Yes, I did. Last night I stopped the file restore. Started a full drive restore, that whole data drive. And it was going, it was using anywhere from 30 to 60, 70% of my gigabit bandwidth. So it was going much faster. Yeah. But after 12 hours in, I came back out from working in the yard. I wasn't working in the yard for 12 hours, but I came back in, and it had failed with less than an hour left to go.
Oh,
so now my decision is: do I let it go for another 12 hours with a potential failure, or do I restart the several day long process of restoring the files individually? Oof. The one
copy of them now, by the way, are you down to this? This is the last place these files exist.
The photos and that stuff. No, they exist somewhere else.
Okay. Okay.
So I can get those back.
Right.
But I will say that ultimately, if Windows Home Server cannot serve its main purpose of restoring files as backed up, then I am this close to it having absolutely no use for me.
Sure.
And me going in there. Well, the only reason I wouldn't format the drive and install something else is I got SharePoint and an SQL Server installed on it, and I don't want to have to do that.
Right.
But
I did a complete backup on my desktop not too long ago. It worked fine. And although it's not huge, I mean, I'm probably...
Did you restore it though, Gary?
Yeah, I did a restore of my desktop. I probably talked about this a while back, maybe a month ago. I had a hard drive crash. So I replaced the hard drive and just did a restore from the server, and bang, I was right back where I left off. And
version 2, right?
Yeah, version 2.
And how big was that backup?
Let me pull it up.
Guessing.
Here. Probably about 500 gigs of the C drive.
Half of a terabyte.
Yeah, Mike, I was interested. You're saying that you were using a lot of your bandwidth to do that on your network on a gigabit LAN. What kind of drive systems are you using?
Well, in both systems, it's just hard drive to hard drive. There's no RAID now. There's no RAID any longer in either system.
So how would you be getting more than, 100 megabits per second?
Oh, I can. Why wouldn't you? I can go to my Unraid server at 100 megabits a second.
Yeah, but you're limited to the transfer rate of the hard drive, right?
Well, what's the transfer rate of a hard drive? It's measured in megabytes, isn't it?
Yeah, megabytes. Yeah, that's
and true. And your local network is megabits, I believe.
Right, right. So, yes. So you're getting a transfer of about 700?
I guess. You know, one thing, when I'm doing the file restore, the individual file restore, Windows Home Server does tell you it's doing it 3 megabytes. It tells you the speed that it's coming across. What it doesn't tell you is the percentage of the network.
Yeah.
That doesn't tell you. Now, whenever you're doing a full restore, it wasn't telling me the speed. I'd have to go into Task Manager and see how much it was using there. But it was going much faster doing the full restore. And I'm restoring over a terabyte of data.
Yeah, still that should work.
What kind of cabinet?
You mean what's the physical box?
Yeah.
One's Antec 300 case, and the other is an Antec 900 case. Okay. I mean, they're home built. Yep. I built them myself.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too. I monitor your drive temperatures.
Oh, those Antec cases keep those drives. You can run them solid all day long, and they're still, you know, cool to the touch. They have fans blowing right over the top of them.
Yeah, so do I. Mine. I know most of the time when I had like you know, multi-terabyte drive transfers that, especially with that old EX485, a lot of times I'm pretty sure when things failed, it was because the drives got too hot.
Yeah, and like Jim mentioned last night when I said it, you know, when it was doing this, the file restored only 3 megabit per second or byte, whatever it was, that was just going so slow. I could, at that same time, copy from my computer to the server, so the opposite direction, and go from it to me. So I can go either direction just with a normal file copy and do that at 50 plus while it was doing the restore. So whatever the restore is doing is just, when you do file level, not full image, it's broken. It's got a problem.
Did you find those VHDs?
No. Where do you see VHDs? I see DATs. I looked all over the drive. I see DATs. I don't see VHDs.
Okay. I don't know.
But I don't know where to look. The other thing is when you go to do a restore, where is it on the dashboard to say restore this drive? Image level restore.
I'd have to open mine up, and
I don't think it's there. What I had to do is go to, I think it was Tim DeLeo who did a little video and says, you know, remote in, go to this directory, go down to this directory, you know, go four directories deep, get this client restore directory for 64-bit, or, you know, if you have a 64-bit system, copy it over to your computer, and then do it.
Hmm.
And I did that, and it was working. It's just, you know, now I'm at a loss as to what do I do? Which way do I go here? But what I got in today, Jim?
Yeah.
A new motherboard, a new CPU, 16 gig of RAM.
Nice.
And a water cooler.
What what kind of board is it? What kind of motherboard?
It's a gigabyte.
Okay.
Gigabit, whatever it is.
So what's the plan? What are you building there?
I'm rebuilding my PC.
Ah.
And yep. You know, I'm an AMD guy, right. So I went six core. They're fast as 6 core. I decided not to get the 8 core. I looked at the 8 core, and it was, in many cases, the 6 core was outperforming, at least for now. You know,
they're just out. I mean, they're brand new. I don't fault you for that.
So, you know, it's a motherboard. The motherboard is AM3, so it you know, later if the 8 cores get faster, I can put it in there. But this will be good for now. And 16 gig of DDR3, I think 1600 speed.
What's the brand?
G-Scale. That's what I usually buy.
Sure. The red stuff? Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's what I've been using.
Red jaw.
In fact, I think I got the same thing sitting over on mine getting ready to go into our server.
How much was the memory? Ooh,
wait, hold on. I got one more really cool thing.
All right. But wait, there's more.
Nice. Oh, yes.
Okay, what size?
120.
Can't you read upside down?
No, I can't.
Oh, is it?
It's really small on my.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, is it right that way? Oh,
I almost bought that one today.
500. I think the speed is 500.
Yeah.
Megabit.
500 down, and I think almost the same up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of putting one of those in my my home theater PC to try and increase the response time, and then set Windows Media Center, because of the limited storage space of that, then take the hard drive out that's in there, put it in a server, and then set Windows Media Center to just automatically archive to home server. And that way I'll get the speed and the snappiness out of the SSD, and still have the storage capacity increase it actually down on the server. But I just opened up dashboard. And if you go to computers and backup on the right-hand side, restore files or folders for the server.
Yeah, but I think...
I think that'll bring it up.
I think that just brings back files. It doesn't do files and folders. That doesn't do the full image restore.
For like your PC.
Well, you're not going to do a full image restore from... You're going to have to boot to the utility to do the full image restore, right?
What if you're doing a data drive like I am?
Well, can't you just now? I haven't done it on version 2, but on version 1, can't you just shut off the C drive and say just restore the D?
Yeah, you can do that also by doing Tim DeLeo's method of going to and finding a directory where the files are and copying them to your computer. Yeah. Okay. Then you do that. It actually wouldn't let me select the C drive, probably because it knows I'm currently running on it. And Rennie's telling me to make sure I update the firmware on that SSD.
Yeah. Well, hold on. So you're running that. So you're booting the computer that you're trying to restore the files to. Mm-hmm. You're running Windows. And
yes.
You're starting this program, and then it's going in and doing the restore options, and it won't let you do C because you're operating off that. And then you're trying to restore files to D while the operating system is still running on it.
Yes. Yes. Hmm.
Yeah, you should be able to do that.
Tim's video was doing. Yeah.
No. I'm not debating whether you can or can't. I'm just thinking. My thought, I guess I was thinking version one centric. That's been most of my experiences, which is you throw the DVD in and or the CD in and you boot to it. And I wouldn't necessarily want to deal with the overhead of Windows. Not that it should make any difference, guys. I'm not trying to say it well. Paradigm for me.
See, I've done several restores, but they've all been on version one, and that's how I did them. Booted off the CD,
right.
And in that case, I was doing the full system restore,
right,
which was whatever drives there were.
And I would think, I don't know for sure, right? And so I haven't done this enough on version two, but or even I've never done this on version one either. But I would think you would be able to do that, and then not select the C drive. So just say don't restore that, just restore the D, and let it do it from the. A little tiny, and again, I'm not saying that Windows creates overhead. It's just another thought of hey, might want to try this while we're at it.
I might end up trying that because
Have you tried installing to another drive? Have you pulled that drive, that data drive, and just tried another one, just to make sure it's not the receiving hard drive that's a problem?
These are two brand new hard drives. The two original ones where they were RAID and they broke.
Right.
The RAID broke. They're sitting over here on a bench because they are my last resort. Let's say none of this works.
Right.
I still have those drives.
Yeah. No. I got you. But the drive you're restoring to.
Yeah.
Have you swapped that out once just to make sure that drive doesn't have some kind of problem? Brand new or not, are you sure that drive doesn't have a problem, a write problem?
No, I have not swapped it out. So I don't know that.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing too is you could pull out that drive that has the data and try to transfer on a different machine. You know, hook it up on a different machine.
What's RAID though?
It was RAID 0.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nope. Never mind.
Which I thought it was completely safe because I was backing it up every night.
Couldn't you? Yeah. Well, it's not over yet.
Well, I'm just pulling up
Go ahead, Gary.
I'm pulling up my restore thing from the dashboard here, and I'm pretty sure it allows you're just like going to restore like a D drive instead of a C drive.
Well, he did that, Gary, and it was taking 30 or 40 hours plus
to get 40% done,
to get that stuff done. That's the way he was doing it,
but and that's real slow because that's not an image restore, that's a file by file.
You're doing it over a network, right?
Yes.
Do you have the ability to take the drive that you're going to put the data on and put it in the same drive and just do it on one within the computer?
Yeah, I could hook. I have one of those little USB things where you just slap the drive into it, and I can connect that to the server. I could do it that way too.
Yeah, or internally to another port, you know.
Yeah,
but that's an alternative.
The one thing, whether I stay with home server or not, this has brought something else to light that I can never recommend this to the average user.
Yeah. Well, I think we've known that.
If this is difficult for, somebody, and not that I'm the most intelligent, but if this is difficult for me, there's no way any of the people I know at work other than the IT department would ever go through this.
Yeah. I'm not thrilled with everything that's going on with home server either.
Go ahead, Gary.
I had troubles with version one, and then the one feature I did like with version one was the pooling of the drives, which they dropped in version two. So now you've got to be much more cognizant of managing each drive individually and making sure that no one drive runs out of space, unless you raid the drives and pool them that way, which, you know, can add extra cost to the whole endeavor. So, yeah, basically for the average user, it's probably over their head, and that's probably why cloud typical solutions are going to be more attractive to the less technologically oriented user.
Yeah, it's a shame because, you know, it has a lot of good features. I like the single instance backup. I mean, I don't know of anything else that does that. And the interface is fairly good. Do you need me to get off, Jim?
No, you're good. We're waiting on Chris and Andrew at this point. I don't know where they're at. So, no, it's a good discussion, Mike, because I don't think anybody argues that Windows Home Server is for the average user. I mean, I think if it was, it would have a lot bigger popularity. And you know, I've been working with Rich a little bit on Rich O'Neill and kind of introduced him to the backup on Windows 7.
That's what I was reading when you called me.
Yeah. And actually there's a real case for that now, because that backup has gotten so good. And if you've got some kind of external NAS, you know, that's not a bad way, or a Drobo. That's not
I
a
have something.
What? Oh yeah. Well, Unraid. if you have something, some kind of storage device, whether attached or unattached, that you can get to from Windows, and Windows 7 is really good at getting to a lot of different things on the network. I mean, it sees all that stuff very easily, and you can map the drive and send it over there. That's actually, I'll be honest, I'm leaning towards that for the average guy. So as we're talking about the stuff for, you know, the average guy that TV. If somebody came, you know, I got a guy up here at work that came to me the other day, and he said, he sent me a note at work about something about his PCs at home. And so I started asking him some questions, and I said, dude, we really need to get you some kind of backup policy, some backup plan, right? Something that you can count on, because you're not doing squat. And I honestly, I'm not going to say, even as a Windows Home Server MVP, he's not a guy I would give a Windows Home Server to. Not a chance. He's a guy I'm going to start with. Hey, think about this two drive IC dock, and let's rate it, and then we'll plug it in via USB, and then we'll move your Windows backups to it. And you could even, if you wanted some network sharing across your PCs, we could even create a folder on there and share it from your PC, and the other ones in the network will see it very easily. That really, I mean, when you talk about the average guy solution, that's a much more viable solution than monkeying around with a Windows Home Server. Mike, the one thing I want to caution you on, or just say, is be careful that, you know, I know you're real turned off to Windows Home Server right now, but make sure you've exhausted all hardware problems before you make a final decision. Because I've done that too, where I've gone down the path and then I realized, crap, it was me. You know, the other day we were trying to do Rich's podcast. Oh, you were there maybe when I was in Starbucks in California. Were you at that?
Yeah.
And the whole second half of the podcast, I couldn't get my mic to work. And I'm like, cursing the laptop and cursing this and cursing that, stupid Skype. And then everybody got off the line and I was monkeying around with something and I was typing something to Rich, and I looked down and I had left the mute. The mute had been on the whole time.
Like, dumbass.
So it was, yeah. And I'm not saying you're doing that. I
things. You know, there's so many things.
But a lot of people complain too.
So really easy to overlook something simple that, yeah, you know, and just for whatever reason, you miss one little thing and it ruins your whole day.
But at the same time, Mike, I saw the comments from the other guys in the forums who were having the same kind of problem. So it's,
yeah, well, that's with the file level backup. I think that if you, even on Microsoft site, that's a well documented problem. And Microsoft even said they're not going to fix it.
Oh, that is brutal.
They're admitting to it, but not going to fix it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so
yeah, I'm sorry that you have to go through it, but you know, as a home server community, we're learning a little bit through it all. I mean, you're kind of a guinea pig, sorry.
But you know, one of the things that's on there is my video editing software, which I guess I could reinstall, but I almost feel like I'm cheating if I go a different route. I want this stupid thing to work, or else
now I know
why I have it.
Right.
But I need that to edit my show from Tuesday night.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. So you got your audio out, but the video is trapped on the drives?
No, actually, here's what happens when I do everything. It all records on my broadcast server. I then immediately copy it over to Unraid, and then I copy it to my computer. So it is, within minutes of the show, it's on three different systems. So right now, it's on the broadcast server and Unraid. So I have all the files.
Okay, so you're good for now.
Just the editing software itself.
Yeah, right. Right, because that RAID was in your main PC?
It was. It was my data drive.
And was it a hardware RAID on the motherboard, or did you have a card?
It was a hardware RAID on a motherboard. Ah. I think that's what failed. As I did a Windows 7 update, which included a NVIDIA chipset driver, which doesn't make any sense why it would fail a RAID that's on a motherboard. Because it failed. Andrew just went offline.
He was here. He says he's having some internet problems.
Oh.
Yeah.
But so, whatever happened, the RAID was destroyed, and I could not get it to come back. So it's 2 1.5 terabyte drives, Caviar Blacks. And when I would go to reset up the RAID, it would combine the two into a RAID 0 of total of 750 gig.
Did you roll that motherboard back, or did you roll that update back? And
that one update was not rollbackable.
Oh. So have you tried, are you going to reinstall Windows 7 from scratch on that motherboard and see if that was the update, or?
On my main system?
Yeah, the one that just failed. So no, you think it was the update that failed, right? That failed the RAID?
Yeah, I don't see why that would happen, but the timing is so coincidental because the RAID's on the motherboard. It's in the CMOS or whatever, the BIOS.
Right, right. Yeah, a Windows update shouldn't have had anything to do with it.
Yeah, it's just the timing when I rebooted it didn't mess up. But the other thing is I'm about to start building this other system from scratch.
Yeah.
So,
but you're not going to throw away that motherboard, right? I mean, you're not thinking that board has gone bad, do you?
Oh, no. See, okay. That's one of the reasons I stay with AMD is because I'm kind of locked in. That motherboard and that CPU and that RAM is going to one of my kids.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.